Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 55. My name is John. You're breaking my heart. You're tearing it apart. So fuck you. All I want to do is have a good time. Now I'm blue. If you've noticed over the course of the entire podcast, I've mellowed a little. Hell, the entire reason I called this the Raging Rhino Podcast to begin with was because I was pissed off. I was very angry, and I wanted to vent. Lately, although things still irk me, I like to think I've been pretty mellow overall. This past month or so, there have been just too many things getting on my nerves. There isn't any one thing that will fill up an entire 30-minute podcast, so I picked four things that really just got to me. But before I get into those four things, I am first going to talk about the other NFL player controversy, an addendum to last month's podcast, if you will. That, of course, is Adrian Peterson, the running back of the Minnesota Vikings, who has been suspended because of a potential child abuse case. The last podcast, I talked, and Gina, of course, was with me, about domestic abuse. I talked about my father who beat me for something one of my siblings did. He knew I was not involved, but he didn't care. He wanted to beat all his kids because he was just that angry. Another time, my mom had to discipline me. I don't remember what I had done. To be honest, I don't even remember the spanking. I just remember later going to my mom and showing her the red marks on my butt where the strap had hit me. She saw what she did. I don't remember the exact quote, but she said words to the effect of, "I'm sorry. This doesn't excuse what you did. And you needed to be punished. But I hit you too hard. And for that, I apologize." I'm pretty sure that was the last time my mom ever spanked me. Not because she felt bad for what she did, but because I didn't need to be spanked again by her. That moment added a new dimension to our relationship, a certain level of respect for me that this authority figure in my life is not some royalty whose every word must be obeyed, but rather a human being who can make mistakes and is just trying to do her best. Later, she told me about the spankings she got from her dad. They weren't from a belt or a strap, but from a switch. Okay, for those of you who have no idea, basically a small branch off of a tree. He didn't leave red marks that lasted an hour or so after the spanking like my mom did to me. With the switch, he left welts that were so severe, it hurt to have to sit down at her desk at school the next day. But that was commonplace back then. Our grandparents and great-grandparents expected that kind of punishment if they misbehaved. They expected that kind of severity if they misbehaved. So when somebody like Charles Barkley talks about how spanking is a Southern thing, well, he's kind of right. ESPN did a poll after the Peterson story broke, and the support for him came from the Southern states. Is spanking bad? Well, you've heard my stories. I had one spanking that not only was undeserved, it was a traumatic experience that still brings tears to my eyes nearly 4 decades later when I think about it. I also had a spanking from someone who I understand was looking to discipline and correct my poor behavior in my youth, so I didn't exhibit the same behaviors as an adult. She just went a little bit overboard. Breaking skin and causing welts, yes, that, certainly, that is bad. But if this is a one-time mistake made by an otherwise good parent? I'm not saying there's a gray area. I'm just questioning if there possibly could be one. When Gina and I were still thinking about having children back at the turn of the millennium, I wondered if I would or could spank them. It became a moot point before I ever came to a definitive answer, and more on that later. I think the closest I had gotten was I could spank a child if it was not done at the time of the bad behavior. I know, that sounds strange, but let me explain. You know the old story about a kid who's done something bad and he's sent to his room to wait until dad gets home? I think there's a couple of reasons for that mythos. First, the wait for the discipline is its own little mental spanking. You've got to sit there and think about what's coming. And that, in and of itself, is something that will cause a child to rethink his habits. Second, whether you wait for another parent to do it or give it time before administering the spanking, that helps prevent the parent from getting caught up in the emotions of the moment when the bad behavior happens. If you go in with the mindset of wanting to properly discipline a child, instead of, "This kid's gonna get it," you can do it without excessive force. Of course, there is the violence is never the answer crowd. I don't think that's correct. There are times, rarely, when violence is the answer. I'm not saying it's all the time, half the time, or even 10% of the time, but sometimes a little pain or discomfort is necessary. Just like sometimes war is the answer. Not in the haphazard way the USA sends its citizens off to die these days, but when a tyrant attacks and there is no other recourse, war may be the only choice. Reason and talks and timeouts don't always work with some children. And to be perfectly honest, that's one of the reasons I'm glad Gina and I decided to remain childless. It's a shitty situation to find yourself in. And these days, with other people sticking their collective noses into your personal business, I would not do well. I do know that I would be the kind of parent to let my kids run out and play, knowing that they will get cuts and bruises and broken bones. And these days, that would make me a bad father as well. But honestly, I seriously doubt I could spank my theoretical children, given the turmoil such things put me through in my youth. However, how I, or anyone, chooses to raise and discipline their children is entirely up to them. Okay, now to the stuff that pisses me off. The first one is kind of near and dear to my heart because it's something that I really love, and that is DC Comics. DC is in a bit of a controversy right now because a t-shirt vendor who DC gave a license to has released a couple of controversial t-shirts. You're going to love this. The first one has Superman kissing Wonder Woman. And the text of the t-shirt says, "Score! Superman does it again." The second t-shirt, designed for women, simply says, "Training to be Batman's wife." Now, if you're reading the normal news outlets, you probably didn't see this because it's not covered there, but it is covered in the comic book nerd sites that I frequent. And there was one commentator named Brett White who wrote this. "Both shirts present undeniably sexist messages. The former positions the most prominent female superhero as a prize to be won, stripping away the character's 75 years of nuance and feminist themes. The latter would be perfectly acceptable if it had only stopped before that final word. The assumption that the goal of any woman's training would be to become someone's wife is antiquated at best." I don't know if that's how he really talks, and I really don't care. But that is his translations of the messages on the t-shirts. Criticizing does not make you immune from criticism. So here's my take on his take. According to the article, you should not celebrate having a girlfriend because women have no value. Nor should an accomplished woman consider herself valuable, a prize, if you will, and be selective in her choice of companions. Perhaps no one should have self-esteem or ever place value on the companionship of another person. According to this article, self-improvement for the cause of attracting your ideal mate is antiquated. A relationship, especially one such as marriage, which usually has the expectation of being long-term, means that you make a dedication to improve yourself for the sake of the relationship. I'm not the same person I was when I met Gina. Hell, I'm not the same person I was 5, 10, 15 years ago either. I've abandoned some things that I used to think were important because as I grew in the relationship, I realized I was better off without it. And I have added some things that I never expected to in my life because I realized as I grew in the relationship that I needed and wanted those things to make myself a better companion for my wife. But here's the big problem with the inane rantings of the pseudo-enlightened. It's a fucking t-shirt. If you don't like what the fucking t-shirt says, don't buy the fucking t-shirt. If you think it's cute or ironic or appealing in any way, and you want to buy it, then buy the damn thing and don't let any moron commentator shame you into buying the shirt or having it for sale. Of all the goddamn things to go off about, a stupid couple of t-shirts And then you're going to berate anybody who happens to like them or happens to purchase them because of your crazy ideas of what those things mean? Oh, and to the company selling the shirt? Just say that they are shirts from Earth 16. I dare anybody to get that reference. Next up, I was listening to the radio a while back. I gotta be honest, I was not paying complete attention. But I heard voices and then somebody said something that just set me off. This man said, and I quote, "Marriage is a union between one man and one woman for the purpose of raising children." Now, I wish I could tell you which radio show I was listening to, but it was definitely one with a conservative bent. I also wish I could tell you if the person was just some schlub like me, I think he was, or if he was a guest on the show. But I was too gobsmacked by the quote to pay much attention. Notice, though, that it's not just the traditional one man, one woman mantra of the self-righteous right. Now, there's more to it this time. Now, you have to be married with the purpose of having children. Interesting. Gina and I have made the conscious decision not to have children. We originally planned on having children. We even bought a house with a larger backyard to have a place for the kids to play. But after a couple of years of failure, I began to wonder why we were trying so hard. And I began to realize that I wasn't doing this because I really wanted children, but because that's what everybody expected us to do. We were still church members back then. Everybody else was getting married and having kids. We got married kind of late in our lives. Everybody expected us to, hey, you got to get in there. You got to have those kids. Everybody was asking us, when are those kids coming? You know, you grow up, you get married, you have kids, and then you let them perpetuate the species. But I don't want to have children just for the sake of having children. Gina and I had been doing pretty well the first few years of our marriage. We had gotten out of debt. We were going on vacations. In fact, we went away on a cruise one year while our friends, who had children immediately after getting married, were begging friends and family to find someone, anyone, to watch the kids for one night so they could go out for a nice dinner and a night at a bed and breakfast. So I came to the conclusion that I didn't want children. But I had no idea how to break it to Gina. One night, we were supposed to go out to our friend's house for dinner. The ones who had to beg people to watch their kids. We got to the house on time, and we walked up to the front door. And just before we rang the doorbell, we could hear sounds of chaos. One kid's crying, another screaming, and Dad is yelling out, "Will you please just eat your dinner?" Gina looked at me and said, "Let's give them a few minutes." So we leaned up against the wall outside in a warm evening, looking around at the clouds. And then Gina looks over to me and says, "I don't know how to tell you this, but I don't think I want to have children." She proceeds to not only list her reasons for not wanting children, she lists them in the same order that I had them in my mind trying to figure out how to tell her. so we knew it was the right decision for both of us. According to this guy, though, our marriage is invalid. We're not having children. We choose not to have children. So ours is not a real marriage. Don't tell me this is the only guy in all of Western civilization who holds that view. You know that's something that's working its way through the more hardcore right-wingers. So anybody who gets married, one man and one woman, but does not have children, your marriage is invalid. Unless, of course, there's more than one definition of marriage in the Christian religion. Along those same lines, the next thing that's kind of pissing me off is businessmen, and I think the latest one was in Idaho, who are being sued or forced by the government to perform same-sex marriage ceremonies or provide some kind of service for same-sex couple marriages that goes against the business owner's beliefs. You know, things like cake makers and such. Which is worse? The government preventing people from exercising their natural rights, or the government forcing people to do something that goes against their natural rights? It is wrong for people to vote on legislation to force their definition of marriage on others. It is equally wrong to force a private business owner or individual to perform a service they don't want to perform. Now, do not for a second misinterpret what I'm trying to tell you. I think it is foolish to turn away business from people. It is anti-capitalistic. But if that is their foolish decision, then so be it. Move on and find someone who will perform the service you need. This is how that notion that the government is allowed to proactively interfere with private business atrophies. This is the legacy of FDR. When his policies began in earnest to force government into private business, it began the erosion of the free market that led to this. FDR's regime had no idea how markets operate and had no respect for free market interaction between those businesses and their customers. They sent in their inept government goons armed with the threat of federal laws and statist theories collected from socialist countries. The result is an anti-capitalistic mess of government red tape that promotes corporatism and prohibits smaller companies and mom-and-pop businesses from realizing their potentials. But an extra side effect of this government interference is this idea that if you don't like how a business is run, you can use the government to make them conform to your wishes. If you don't like the way a business is run, get the word out to the world. Get on social media, tell everyone you know that this business does not perform gay weddings. Then, let it go. Just let it go. Let the proverbial chips fall where they may. If enough people agree with you that the business should allow gay weddings, then either the business changes their policy, or the business loses customers that are driven away. But you cannot force the business to conform to your beliefs any more than they should be allowed to force their beliefs on you. If you believe in the freedom of speech, no matter what that speech may be, then you logically must also allow a business to accept or decline customers at their pleasure not yours. Either way, you must allow people to exercise their rights, whether or not you feel it is moral or correct. To bring the government into this, to force people to conform to your will, is amoral. Think about this. This is a group of people who have been prevented from their natural rights of free association and private contract, all under the guise of traditional marriage. Now that the light of liberty has dispelled the shadows of the tyrannical majority, they are leveraging that liberty to take away the rights of others. This is totally wrong. This is becoming the very tyrannical evil you have fought so long to overthrow. Last thing, and boy, this is running longer than I'd expected it to. I recently spent some time in Jamaica with Gina, of course, obviously. If you read my Twitter feed, you know I was there with her. On the way home, I had to deal with Jamaican airport security. Now, this was part of a package deal that we got for our anniversary. And the package deal included, on the way home, a pass to the Fast Track line of airport security. Fast Track is still the typical stuff. You take off your shoes, take off all your medals, remove your laptops, blah, blah, blah. They scanned everything. It took longer than it does in the U.S. So even though it's the Fast Track, there's still a long line. And after you pass through, there is a glut to get your stuff as it's coming through the scanner. Then, as you get your stuff, there aren't very many places for you to get your shoes back on and your belt back on and all your stuff collected. In fact, the Fast Track line has a couple of seats, and then right next to it is all the other lines that are coming through the main security, and there's maybe 3 or 4 seats there. So total, maybe about 6 spots for people to come through when you have literally 1,000 people in line coming through security. So, I grabbed all my stuff and walked off and found a wall that I could lean against to get everything taken care of. I get my shoes back on and I get them tied because I am done with security. Yeehaw! We go off to the lounge, which is another perk of the vacation package. It was really, really cool. I highly recommend it. If you're ever in Jamaica and you're leaving, I think you should at least give the Mobay Lounge a try. You know, free beer and snacks and a place to freshen up before you go on a nearly 4-hour flight, in our case. We hang around for about 10 minutes after our plane begins to board because we know, well, we got all our stuff. We're just going to hop on the plane. We'll be ready to go. Have our last little bit of snacks and our drinks. We get to the gate, and I get pulled over by security for another search. I've been through security already. All my belongings have already been scanned, and I've been fondled by their version of the TSA, which, granted, was a somewhat attractive woman, but that's beside the point. I have passed and am now in the secure area. But that's not enough for them. Now I've got to take off my shoes again, take everything out of my pockets, and surrender my carry-on bag for them to inspect. The same carry-on bag that has already been x-rayed and inspected by security. There are no scanners or anything like that. It's just a bunch of surly, and this time unattractive women, doing this. And I'm pissed off. But I'm doing everything I can not to let it show, because who knows what these security people are capable of if I express my anger. I take off my shoes so they can pick them up, and they flex them about as much as I do in my regular walking stride, which obviously makes all the difference for security. I put my shoes back on and step over to the table where the security person has opened my bag and looked inside, but as far as I can see, has not actually reached in and looked at anything. I'm told to lay out all my stuff in my pockets on the table while she inspects the outside of my bag. She mumbles something, and I have to have her repeat it because I can't understand what the fuck she's saying. I'm done with you, she says. And I'm finally able to board. Now, I'm in a foreign country. I do what I'm told because I'm in a foreign country. I will conform to their laws because I'm in a fucking foreign country. But that made me furious. How bad is your initial security if you have to have random secondary security searches at the gate? I have no faith in the main security area at the Montego Bay Airport, and Jamaica's own policies have caused that distrust. And don't think for a second that this eases my disdain for the TSA here in the United States. They are just as much of a false sense of security as this foolishness in Jamaica. They have yet to catch a terrorist. Although, to be honest, I fully expect something like that to make national news in the next couple of years because they need justification for their existence, even if that justification is manufactured. And yes, I am saying, and I would not be surprised, if they put through a false terrorist just to tout the TSA. The TSA, though, has been caught stealing from people. And that isn't something you're likely to see pushed heavily in national news, because both Republicans and Democrats have a stake in keeping the TSA going. The funny thing is, I had a great time in Jamaica. The beach at the resort was beautiful. There was some fantastic eye candy. The food was phenomenal. I drank way too much one day, and Gina was a little upset with me, and there were a couple of rainy days, but all in all, it was a blast. But that bullshit with Jamaican security totally harshed my buzz. By the way, at Customs in Houston on the way home, I saw them bring out the drug-sniffing dog to the luggage carousel that held the bags coming in from Jamaica. To quote Ron White, "That's profiling, and that's wrong." Okay, I'm joking now. So I think I've got most of the anger out for the time being. Maybe next podcast will be a little bit more mellow. Maybe. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.